Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
You say yes when you mean no. You apologize when it's not your fault. You read the room, you manage everyone's feelings, and somehow always end up last on your own list. And from the outside, people call you kind, easygoing, so given. But on the inside, you're exhausted, a little resentful, and quietly wondering when it became your job to keep everyone else comfortable at your own expense. That's people pleasing. And today's guest is a psychotherapist who spent years studying why we do this. And she is here to help us understand where it comes from, what it's costing us, and how to gently break the pattern. Now, my guest today brings a fascinating combination of insight and life experience. Susan is a psychotherapist in a private practice in New York City with over a decade of experience helping people understand themselves and change the patterns that hold them back. And she's here to talk about the part I love. Before this, she was a network television producer who reinvented herself later in life. So she knows about transformation, not just as a therapist, but as someone who lived it. Today, she's here to talk about something that touches nearly all of us, people pleasing. Susan, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you. That was a wonderful introduction.
Aw, thank you. Now, let's start by naming it clearly, because people pleasing hides behind some very like flattering disguises. We call it, you know, being nice, being kind, being easygoing, but you say it's something deeper and more costly than that. So what exactly, you know, what is it actually people pleasing mean to people? What is it?
People pleasing actually is a form of perfectionism. It's that part of ourselves that always wants to be. And I'm going to use women because, in fact, women are more prone to this behavior, it's been shown, than men, whether it's because of socialization or just the double messages that women get. They are more likely to revert to this kind of good girl behavior.
Yeah.
And it's part of this whole perfectionistic thing that women deal with their whole lives, which is, I must be thin, I must be successful, my family must be happy, and no, I should have the great career, I should look always good on the outside, and no one should ever be mad at me. I should be making everyone happy. And this shows up over and over again. It shows up particularly in the workplace, where women overprepare, overwork, in order to avert criticism.
Right.
It shows up in families where women are sometimes the silent caretakers to such a degree that they completely give up their own needs and their own life to be the woman who's loved, the woman who's cared about, while they're exhausting themselves with taking care of everybody around them.
Yeah.
So it shows up in a whole bunch of ways. It's not really coming from a place of generosity and kindness, although it could. I mean,
yeah.
It's not in every case. I mean, there are people who are just genuinely kind, genuinely generous. We're talking about that compulsive, always needing to give, always needing to say yes when you want to say no, and then feeling resentful about it, always overscheduling and trying to do everything for everybody,
yeah,
to the point of burnout. We're talking about those compulsive behaviors, which are often rooted in unhealthy patterns coming from childhood, dysfunctional families, and the message that you're never good enough unless everyone around you is happy.
Yes, I agree. And what's the line between like generally being kind and generous person and falling into a pattern where that quietly erodes you?
Well, if you find yourself depressed, burnt out, always saying yes when you want to say no, overscheduling, taking on all those extra activities, and you feel depleted,
yes,
or anxious, something's wrong. There is that, as we talked about, the genuine, generous kindness. Those things, usually when you do them out of choice,
right,
and because your cup is really full and
yeah,
you're not depleted, you get a good feeling. You're not
right,
diminished by them. But when you're in this unhealthy pattern of people pleasing and always doing for others, you can feel depressed. You can have physical symptoms. Gastrointestinal symptoms are a big tip off. Chronic fatigue is another big tip off. If you find yourself building resentment and anger, those are signs that this has gone too far, that you're in the unhealthy areas of giving. Also, if it's never feels like enough, like you've never done enough,
right?
You really need to pull back and ask yourself, what's wrong here? Are things out of balance?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it kind of bleeds into the unhealthy territory of giving. Giving is wonderful. Giving is a sign of love. When you give from an empty, when you give from a full heart and a full cup, it can be one of the most beautiful experiences in life. But we're talking about really when you've given too much.
Yeah, I love that answer. And I think a lot of listeners are going to recognize themselves here and wonder, why am I like this? Why do people, like you mentioned, people, sometimes it comes from childhood. Like, where does people pleasing actually come from?
It can come from a number of places. It can come from wanting to avoid conflict. Maybe you grew up in a home where saying no or saying what you want, you saw in the people around you, just caused too many problems. It causes conflict. It causes irreparable harm. You get a message there that saying yes when you want to say no is better. Yeah. Getting along and going along is better than actually saying what you want and what you need. Very often we find in dysfunctional homes, there's what we call parentification. And that is where the child in the home is actually emotionally caretaking for the parent.
Mm-hmm.
And because every child wants and needs to be loved, they want the parent to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see little kids literally providing the emotional sustenance in a home for the one or the other of the parents.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of where it starts. Parentification, wanting to avoid conflict. Sometimes I've even seen it in homes where there is one sibling, let's say a so-called problem sibling, where one of the children really is either troubled or needy and the parents are overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
The remaining child or children will very often become people pleasers because they know to speak up, to state their needs, and to not be okay is to add one more burden on mom and dad, and they don't want to be that child. So they will suppress by habit their own needs and their own wants just to make everything okay. And kids growing up want it to be okay. Why? Because if mom and dad don't love me, then where am I? Who's going to take care of me? So that basic love and need for our parents is really at the heart of a lot of this. And it's kind of sad.
Yeah.
I had someone in my office the other day, a lovely young woman who grew up with an older brother who definitely had some serious problems. The parents were just overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
And she grew up not only not expressing her needs and also calling the older brother's abuse out, because she was abused in this scenario. Not only not calling that out, but really suppressing her own needs. And it's now gotten to the point where she is so depressed at times that she doesn't know what she feels. And that can be the real end result of people pleasing.
Right.
You don't even know who you are anymore. And so what we're trying to do in therapy together is to first get her to recognize, what does she feel?
Right. I love that. And that's really important, because I think after repressing it for so long, you become numb inside. You don't know what those feelings are, and that could be very dangerous, and you could easily get just lost in the world, and really build up a lot of, stress in your life and not being able to move forward. And lots of things, can occur, even illness,
Yeah.
Is there something we can learn early, like a way we once kept ourselves safe or loved or accepted?
I think this is where the parents do come in. I have another client who's been a wonderful person, but she's been working on this for years.
Yeah.
And young women seem particularly vulnerable to this. But I think in her case, she inherited it from a mother who was the champion people pleaser of the world. And the message she got was she didn't want to play with a little girl who was on the block in a small town.
Right.
But her mother was very good at getting along. She knew the small town psychology of, we've got to get along. Everybody's got to like us. Dad works in this town. We can't make any neighbors unhappy.
Right.
So this little girl was forced to play. She's an adult now. She was forced to play with the little girl across the street who she didn't like.
Yeah.
But her mother told her to do it and to get along. And the message she got, which was getting along with everybody is more important than being who you really are, getting what you really want.
Yeah.
Now, to some degree, that's not horrible advice. We do need to get along. But she took this to such an extreme.
Yeah.
That, you know, even now when she speaks up against, I don't know, some horrible abusive situation, she feels guilty.
Right.
I shouldn't have done it. I just should have learned to live with this. Live with it.
Wow.
Is a very big problem. And this mom basically had the same behavior with her sister and her mother, and my client just inherited this from watching the people pleasing in her own mother.
Yeah.
And then we have the self-sacrificing parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who really do go above and beyond. That's another message. You can never give enough.
Yeah.
If it's family, if it's love, you know, this is love. This is what love looks like. Well, love does not look like hurting yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And I see that all the time. Now, help us understand the roots, because I think people see where it started. They stop blaming themselves for it.
I think it's a fear reaction. You know, there's a man who's written a wonderful book about complex post-traumatic stress disorder, which I really highly recommend. It's called CPTSD, From Surviving to Thriving. It's by a man named Pete Walker. It's a classic book in the field, and I highly recommend it. He describes people pleasing as a fear response that is really anxiety. There are, in his opinion, there are four classic responses. There's fight, flight, freeze, and there's a fourth one that he calls fawn or fawning. Fawning is a response to anxiety. How do I make this calm down? How do I make everyone, myself, calm down? Well, I give in. I say nice things. I go overboard to make the other person not attack me. And you see this a lot with people who apologize constantly.
Yeah.
You know? And another woman in my office the other day said she does it by over-explaining.
Yeah.
And it actually hurts her professionally because every decision she makes, she feels she has to justify. It's another form of people-pleasing.
Yeah.
Until finally someone pointed out to her, you know, you can just say you did it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to keep telling everybody why you did it, how you did it. Nobody really needs to know that.
Yeah.
We accept your authority and we trust you. She realized she did it to make people like her. She realized she did it so people wouldn't get angry at her.
Yeah.
She realized she did it to decrease her own anxiety about not being liked or not being smart enough or not being good enough.
Right. Wow. Now, let's talk about what, you know, this really takes from us, like, because on the surface, it can look harmless and even admirable, you know, but what is chronic, you know, people pleasing actually costing the people who do it in their energy, in their relationships, in their self, you know, a sense of self, you know, and even in their health?
Well, health-wise is really, it's devastating. You know, if you keep doing something and you resent it, a lot of anger and toxicity builds up.
Yeah.
And we know how that contributes to health, to the overall inflammation, heart disease. Gastrointestinal problems are a tip-off that something's not right, usually.
Yes, yes.
That's a big one. Depression. Depression is resentment and anger held inward. So you see that depression can result. But I think the biggest tragedy of it is loss of self, or what I call betrayal of self.
Mm-hmm.
You no longer, if you keep doing this chronically, saying yes when you want to say no, not putting boundaries in place with people.
Yeah.
Doing things you don't want to do because you feel you should do them. you end up betraying yourself to the point where you are living a completely inauthentic life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've all fallen into that trap in our lives, but luckily we get ourselves out of it, or we see a good therapist and we get ourselves out of it.
Yeah.
But the tragedy is living a life that you didn't want to live. It was never your intention to live.
Yeah.
Other people thought this was right for you. And that is the biggest downside that I see, when you never even knew who you were.
Right.
To begin with, because you kept doing what you felt you should do. I'm in a career. My mother wanted me to go into this career. You hear this? My mother thought it was a good idea.
Right.
My husband likes that I do this. I would stop this, but my kids will be so unhappy.
Right.
Again, whose life are you living? And I'm not saying we don't make sacrifices and compromises for the sake of our relationships. We do. But when you wake up one morning and you don't know what you feel or who you are, that can be the worst result of chronic people pleasing, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And why do so many people pleasers end up feeling resentful and burned out, or like they lost touch with, you know, what they even want in life?
I think they don't know that they can actually stop and change.
Yeah.
Until either something serious forces them to, or they just can't keep going on the way. Burnout and breakdown are not bad things.
Right.
Let me just say that. Sometimes having a breakdown or having a burnout is one of the best. I mean, it feels devastating at the time, but it is your psyche's way of telling you, okay, this is not working.
Yeah.
You've got to stop this. You've got to figure out something else, why you're doing this. What's it getting you?
Right.
And rebuild. It's not a bad thing to hit the wall.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, I don't think many people even think that, you know.
No, they see it as a failure to admit that I can't go on anymore, mm-hmm. to admit that I'm chronically depressed and I can't get through the day.
Very
it's not
true.
A failure. It's
no.
honesty. And it can be actually, I don't want to glorify it because it's painful, but it can be the beginning of a better life.
Right.
If you're listening, if you're paying attention, and if you're willing to start again.
Right.
And make some changes. I don't recommend big changes. If you recognize it, you can start small.
Exactly.
You can work with a therapist, do small behavioral changes, start low stakes, baby steps.
Yes.
It's the small changes over time that actually add up to the big changes in your life.
Right. That's so true. And for the listeners out there, if you've been quietly nodding along all through this and you are, you know, so, you know, not alone, and you, in this next part is where the hope comes in. Follow the advisor with Stacey Chalemi right now. Every week we bring you the experts who help you understand yourself, set healthier boundaries, and live with more freedom and peace. Now, here's the part, you know, everyone wants, because for a people pleaser, you know, just say no feels almost impossible. Why is saying no so generally hard for these folks? And what happens internally when they try? Like, walk us through it.
So we're talking about boundary setting, right?
Yeah.
And I think you need to notice when your energy is depleted by some situation. That's a tip off that maybe you need to set a boundary.
Yeah.
One of the big problems with boundary setting, I had a person come into my office the other day. She said, you know, I tried setting a boundary with this friend of mine. You told me to go out and set a boundary and say no with what I didn't want to do.
Yeah.
And I did it. And, you know, she wouldn't listen. She still pushed back. Still said she wanted to, this other person wanted to do it. And I said, well, let's, I hear you. And things don't go well the first few times you start setting a boundary because it's a new behavior for you.
Right.
So you can expect that the first few times it won't go well because you got to get good at this.
Yeah.
But let's do a little role play. How exactly did you set this boundary when this person said they wanted to do this thing and you said no?
Right.
She related the language she used and it was so unclear. It was so like wishy-washy. It doesn't even begin to describe. She felt so guilty and so bad about setting this boundary that the language she was using was very weak and unclear.
Yeah.
And my response was, well, no wonder your friend didn't get it.
Yeah.
You know, you made it sound like it was an option. You didn't make it sound like a boundary.
Yeah.
You didn't put your you didn't put your authenticity and your real meaning behind it.
Right.
So I said, let's try this again. Let's try saying, no, that's not what I cannot do that now.
Yeah.
Thank you for asking me, but I really can't make it.
Right.
I'm feeling a little overextended right now. Maybe you'll ask me another time, but right now I'm going to have to say no. We went through the language where no means no, where you're mm-hmm. setting the boundary.
Yes.
I think when you're first starting, you do want to start low stakes because it's not going to be pretty. You're not going to do a good job.
Right.
But if you're going to do it, try using clear language. You know, try letting the no come through. I think the one thing is that people think they're selfish if they set a boundary. And they feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
It's in fact one of the most selfless things you can do.
Right.
Because if you take care of your needs by setting a boundary, by saying no, the other person doesn't have to take care of you. And other people in your life don't have to take care of you. You're not a burden. It's actually selfless. Plus, you're letting the other person know who you really are. Because
mm-hmm.
finally, you're being real. You're being authentic.
Yeah.
And they need to know. And sometimes if they're going to say, well, that doesn't go over with me. I don't want to be your friend anymore.
Yeah.
Did you really want that? Do you really need that person for a friend?
Right.
A person who doesn't understand and doesn't accept you for who you are?
Yeah.
So it's tricky. There's guilt. There's complexity. But I think if more and more of us do it, and boundaries are not forever. They're not brick walls that you build forever.
Right.
It's like you build a fence, you put a gate in it.
Yeah.
And you determine who you open the gate for and you close the gate for.
Yeah.
It's intentional rather than controlling.
Right. I agree. And that's great advice. Now, what's a gentle, realistic way someone can actually start setting a boundary or saying no, not even a small one, but without drowning in guilt afterward?
Well, remember, guilt is a choice.
Yes.
That's your choice.
Yes.
The other person really can't make you feel guilty. You are choosing.
Exactly.
To feel guilty. So I would say free yourself of the guilt. But, you can practice nice ways of saying no.
Just right.
Even write out a list of them.
Yeah.
There's a real old saying, a grandma saying that is, say what you mean, mean what you say, but don't say it meanly.
Right.
You don't have to hit them over the head with it. You can be fairly kind, but direct and say it.
Yes.
The more you do it, the better you're going to get at it. It's just right. Because we're new at these behaviors that they come out a little wonky. But, with time,
Yeah.
Time, I think that anybody can master it. It's a matter of being a new skill.
Right. I agree. Now, this is the transformation I most want for our listeners. What does it actually look like to recover from people pleasing to start honoring your own needs without becoming cold or selfish?
I think when you start, the byproduct of starting to honor your own needs is your feelings, a decrease in anxiety. A lot of what I talk about in my practice is this idea of perfectionism, having to be all things to all people.
Yeah.
All the time.
Right.
When you put that down, when you stop that behavior and you try to figure out who you are reasonably within the context of your situation, the byproducts are enormous.
Yeah.
It is a decrease in anxiety, and anxiety is exhausting.
Yeah.
It really depletes a person. And I think very often it does lead to chronic depression, feelings of low self-worth, feeling of constant tiredness. Feelings of just no joy in life. People mistake depression for dark thoughts. It can be dark thoughts. But what it is really is what we call anhedonia, which is I no longer take pleasure in life. Yeah. I no longer feel good about the things that used to make me feel good.
Right.
If that is what's happening to you, look at where you are betraying yourself, where you're giving over to other people's needs. Because if you can stop that, if you can learn to set boundaries, if you can stop overexpecting things from yourself, one of the things that I really kind of preach is self-compassion.
Yeah.
We don't talk to ourselves very nicely. We do not. If we talk to ourselves the way we talk to people we know, friends, no one would be friends with us.
Right.
It's this idea that, okay, I messed up. I didn't do it. I couldn't do it. I didn't feel it.
Yeah.
That's okay. Given where I was today, given what I had to deal with, given what situations are going on in my life, I still did okay. I still tried my best.
Right.
But I have to understand that I'm under these other pressures and I have to give myself, you know, there's a saying, give yourself grace.
Yeah.
I have to give myself this compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So I think self-compassion, and if anybody can get a hold, I always recommend books. I'm just like, I'm such a bibliotherapist because I believe that so many of the books out there are so great. But there's a terrific book by Dr. Kristen Neff, who's a leader in self-compassion. And she is combined with another practitioner named Chris Germer, and he is into mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And mindfulness is just a fancy word of saying, I'm present. I'm here. I'm right here. I'm not in the future, worried about something that's going to happen. I'm not in the past, regretting what I did a long time ago.
Yeah.
And they have put together this mindfulness and self-compassion workbook, which is just the two things put together are dynamite tools. If you're going through this, anybody.
Yeah.
Get a hold of that. Also, go to my website because I've got downloads on perfectionism, setting boundaries, self-compassion, which you could take a look at. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you can do to kind of rework it, the framework that you're operating from.
I love that. And speaking as someone who reinvented her own life, what would you say to the person who spent years putting everyone else first and is now realizing that they're allowed to matter too?
Well, you know, I was forced to make the change because I was so burned out.
Yeah.
Don't wait until then. Try to get it before then, before you're forced to try to make that choice.
Right.
Don't be afraid of it. You know, sometimes loss is that way into reinventing yourself.
Yeah.
And I did it at the age of 58. I was way over the hill when I did it.
Yeah.
And with a lot of help from a lot of lovely people. But, you know, because no one ever does anything alone. That's another thing.
Yeah.
No one does anything alone. That's a myth.
I agree.
So get a team, get an advisory board.
Mm-hmm.
And my second career was what I wanted to do. It wasn't
right.
What I was told to do. It wasn't what
yes.
I felt I should do to compensate, you know, for my own shame and my own background. It was what I wanted to do.
Right.
I would say if you get that chance, go for it, because I think you will be happier. It may not work out exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Think it's going to work out, but it might even work out to be something better than what you thought. Life has a funny way of giving us not what we want.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes giving us what we need.
Yeah.
More than in a way that we never thought we needed it.
Right.
I needed this career to feel whole. I needed to really use this ability that I had to answer my calling. But, you know, I denied it. I denied it because I didn't want to change. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of change. Don't be afraid of don't be afraid of making mistakes.
Right.
Mistakes are how we learn.
Yes.
And you don't have to be perfect.
Right.
You can be you and you can be happy and it is enough.
Exactly.
It's enough.
Exactly. Now, you spent over a decade helping people untangle these patterns and become, you know, home to themselves. So what do you most want the listener, you know, listening to this, the one who's so good at taking care of everyone but themselves to truly understand?
If you want to give, give, but make sure you're not giving from an empty well. You need to prevent burnout. Fill that well. Take care of yourself. Self-care is so important.
Yes.
And if you're going to give, don't be tied to the outcome.
Yeah.
Because you may end up very disappointed.
Right.
You know, you can give as long as you don't have expectations
exactly.
of how it's going to all work out.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's giving to get control.
Yeah.
And you might be very disappointed. So if you give for the sake of giving, just because it makes you feel good, that's wonderful. That's a wonderful capacity to have. And we need more people like you.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just say, please take care of yourself. I've known a lot of older women now are such great grandmas. They're
mm-hmm.
terrific grandmothers.
Yeah.
And some of them are choosing, remember that word, choosing to take care of the grandchildren, to give the kids a break.
Yeah.
And childcare costs are so ridiculous now. I don't know how couples are doing it. So grandma and grandpa are pitching in and taking over. If you want to do that, that's great. If you don't, that's great too. You have a right to your own life. But if you are going to make that choice, at least take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Make sure you get enough exercise and good food and, you know, and know where you stop and other people begin.
Yes. Very great. That's awesome advice. That's so true. Now, tell us about the services that you provide.
Well, I do psychotherapy, mostly with individuals. I do have men in my practice, but I do specialize a lot with women perfectionists, highly ambitious career women who were like I used to be a long time ago.
Yeah.
I burned out to try to help you avoid what happened to me.
Yeah.
I do have a method. It works with cognitive behavioral therapy combined with self-compassion, combined with mindfulness, combined with psychodynamic psychotherapy. So I use a four and the psychodynamic psychotherapy leading to a growth mindset. So it's cognitive behavioral, which is changing your core beliefs about your perfectionism, which is causing you the anxiety.
Right.
Going to self-compassion, then going to mindfulness, then going to what got you there. Mm-hmm. We're not going to stay there, but what got you there. Mm-hmm. And how we can switch that around and and make it into a growth mindset. So that's my kind of 5 or 6 step approach. And I do that both in therapy sessions and coaching.
Yeah.
So if you want to check that out, definitely come to go to my website. It's susanpodbielski.com. There's free downloads and some information about all of that and how perfectionism really is the problem of our time for women.
That definitely is. It definitely is. And can people find you on social media as well?
I am on LinkedIn and Facebook, not on Instagram right now, but I have a blog where I write about all kinds of issues.
Yeah.
Including siblings now. Siblings are a big thing now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finding more and more people coming in with sibling problems than ever before. It makes sense. Siblings are, you know, that's one of the longest relationships you'll ever have in your life.
Yeah, agreed. And for the listeners out there, it turns out that being kind was never the problem. The problem is disappearing in the process, losing yourself, trying to keep everyone else happy. And the good news is that you're allowed to be both caring towards others and faithful to yourself. And I thank you so much, Susan, for being on the show today. You know, I think, you know, what you do is amazing. And you reminded us today that putting yourself back on the list isn't selfish. It's how you actually show up. And you show up fully for the people and the life you love. And I thank you. I thank you so much for being on today's, you know, podcast. I think, you know, it's really something that people need, you know. I'm so happy that you are focusing on people pleasing and focusing on these topics. And I'm so glad you took the time today to share your knowledge with us. And I hope you'll be back on the show where we can talk some more and go more in depth about people pleasing and related topics, because this is something people need and they need direction and they need people like you to show them the way. And I thank you for your being you. And I thank you for, you know, taking the time to help others, you know, get to the place where they need to be in life.
Thank you, Stacey. And thank you for all the work that you do on these issues. It's so important. And thanks again for having me. I really loved it.
Thank you. And you have a great day.
You too, Stacey.